Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. Just this show and one more show to go, and I will be leaving the airwaves, at least for this show, for a while. I will be doing some other things this summer with my other program, if you're just finding out. The other program that I do, Unfound, that continues to grow every week, every month. And myself and the listeners are doing some really good work over there, trying to solve these cases that we cover and, you know, at least dig up new leads in cases that in some instances go the whole way back to the 1960s. And I'm really enjoying that over there. I don't enjoy that disappearances happen, but that I enjoy that I can help these people in some way, in some concrete way. So that's what I'm going to be working on. I'm going to be working on a book this summer that's going to take up, I think, a lot of my time. But I think that I'm going to have some help putting it together. So I'm looking forward to getting that done. And hopefully it'll be done by September. We'll just have to see. Did you see my Pirates last night? Did you hear about this? In the 10th inning, they went back-to-back-to-back home runs. They were losing 5-3 going into the 9th inning. They tied it up. And then in the 10th inning, they scored 7 runs and won 12-5, which is nice because the night before, they were winning going to the 9th, into the bottom of the 9th, and then went into extra innings and lost. And now today they are playing early. I think the game starts at 12 or something like that. So probably after I'm done doing this, I will be following them. And in fact, I was watching some golf this morning before I started doing this program. Pirates, I don't know. I don't know where they're going. They've had a lot of problems losing some key players. Their best pitcher was diagnosed with testicular cancer. Another guy got suspended because of steroids. Jung Ho Gung can't get out of South Korea because of his drunk driving arrests. It's been a season. And I don't think anybody will fault the Pirates if they fall short of at least winning half their games this year. I certainly will not. It's a tough gig. You never know. And so they have a lot of guys who are playing right now that I don't know if anybody would have ever thought any of them were at all going to play this year. And here they are starting multiple games per week. Just never know. But it's, I guess for them it's good because they get a chance to show themselves a lot earlier than they thought they would. And maybe they have a chance of sticking if they can play well enough. And so this is a good opportunity for them, and I hope they seize upon it. All I know is Adam Frazier, the leadoff guy for the Pirates, may just be the best hitter in baseball right now. Crushing the ball. He got on base all 6 times last night, between walks and hits. And he had a home run, too. All 6 times he came to the plate, he got on base. Crazy. Let's get to the program. I guess I need to do a follow-up on the terrorist attack in Manchester from a couple nights ago. Did not talk about it yesterday. British authorities have identified the guy, and on top of that, they have tracked down some of the people they believe helped him put this bomb together. I'm hearing that it was a significantly large bomb that they believed he couldn't have done this all by himself, and so that's why they went out and found these other people. And some of these people aren't even in England. Aren't even in the United Kingdom. Two of this guy's family members, I think it was his father and a brother, were tracked down in Libya. And you should know that the guy who did this terrorist, was born in England. He was born of parents who fled from Gaddafi. So once again, it's not necessarily a migrant from Syria or any other country that got in illegally or having lax borders or anything like that. He was a British-born citizen from Libyan parents who did this. and all of you think that fixing our immigration in the United States is going to solve our terrorist problem. You're totally wrong, and I would say that for the rest of the world as well. It's not going to fix it. So the British authorities, British police, and military, whoever else, went out and got these people, some of these family members, and they are now in custody, going once again as far away as Libya. Now, the interesting part about this story, and this shouldn't be any surprise given all of the other stories that have been out in the last couple months, is that the British intelligence services are not too happy, and British police are not too happy with the way the United States has handled this. The Manchester police, the British government's belief is that the United States authorities have released information that they shouldn't have. And so the new Prime Minister of England is going to be giving Donald Trump a hard time, I guess, that the next time they meet at NATO, and maybe they've probably already talked on the phone as well. I don't know why anybody in the United Kingdom or Manchester or Great Britain, whatever you want to call it, is surprised about this. We have the biggest leaker as President of the United States. Now, Donald Trump is acting all ticked off about this, you should know. He's saying that he's disgusted by it. He's saying that these leaks aren't helping stopping terrorism, and we need to respect the British authorities in this matter and everything else. Meanwhile, he's talking to South Korea about a couple nuclear subs that we have off their coast. Meanwhile, he's talking to the Russians about some secret information that was collected by, I guess it wasn't by Israel, but it was by Jordan now. And then he's acting all ticked off that there are leaks out there. His entire administration is nothing but a bunch of leaks. This is what happens when you put a team together like he has. People with no character. From Steve Bannon, Corey Lewandowski, right down the list. Rance Rebus, whoever else. Kellyanne Conway, no character whatsoever. All they care about is the attention. Why? Because their boss only cares about the attention. He cares about if his name is in the headlines. These people want to make friends. They want to be seen as important. And so this is what those kinds of people do, not just in politics, but anywhere. In a private business, in a corporation, in some sports league, whether it's professional or amateur, this is what those kinds of people do. They can't keep their mouths shut. Now, this is of particular interest to me because with my other program, I have a lot of difficult conversations with people. Mostly, I'm talking to parents of children, when I say children, grown children usually, 20s and their 30s, who have disappeared. And they rely on me to be confidential about our conversations. Now, eventually we do an official interview that ends up on the program. But there are many things that we talk about that never get into an interview, are never going to be written anywhere. I'm never going to tell anybody about them. Why? Because that's what these people need. That's what they deserve. And they need to know that they can trust me. And they can, because I'm a good guy. So I all know all about keeping secrets and not leaking stuff. I know all about it. And so when I hear all this leaking stuff, this is what continually runs through my head. Because since last September, so many people have trusted me with, you know, their stories, very, very personal stories. Personal. And I can't show them enough respect by them doing this, by them trusting me. Obviously, the Trump administration doesn't think like that. They think that when they get information, that they can then show how smart they are by telling other people about it. You know, whatever happened to the idea that, you know what, I like keeping my mouth shut about some secret because then that means I know more than somebody else does. What is this need for people to actually display that they know more than other people when they know that the information that they've collected shouldn't be told? What is that? Does nobody grow up anymore? Is this just, I think I haven't mentioned this in a while, but it is amazing to me now that I'm 46 years old that, you know, when I was like 14, 15, 16, you know, you look up at people who are in their 40s at the time and you think how mature they are and how they handle themselves so well. And I've gotten to that age. And what I've learned is that for the most part, people change, and some people change for the worse or they change for the better. It just depends. But all of that underlying stuff that goes on in high school with cliques and rumors and backstabbing and everything, it doesn't end when you're an adult either. It is completely disgusting. I've seen it in every facet of my life. Now, the good news with my life is that there's only one part of it that is important, and that's doing this other show where there's real secrecy and privacy involved. Everything else is like an open book. But I see it going on in these other areas, and it's disgusting. Are we adults, or are we just children who are taller? And that's what I think of. This is what I think of when I think of the Trump administration. They're a bunch of children. Donald Trump may be a billionaire. Who knows how much what he's worth. And they may all have all of their educations and experience, whatever. They're still, when it comes to their actions, a bunch of children. I couldn't say that about the Barack Obama administration. They were something else. They were just a bunch of evil people. But with the Trump White House, it's obvious to me that it's nothing but a high school. The White House has become a high school. Circulating rumors, talking about people behind their backs, infighting. And you voted for this. And now we've ticked off probably our greatest ally, to the point where I'm hearing right now that they don't want to tell us anymore, anything about their investigation now. They've kind of shut the United States for as much as they can do. I mean, we're everywhere. They're shutting us out of the information because too many people can't keep their mouths shut. And I think that this is a direct reflection on the administration. I don't know. I don't think this was done by anybody in the intelligence community or anybody like that. I think this starts right in the White House. And that's what makes Donald Trump coming out and saying all this stuff so dang funny and complaining about it. He loves leaks. He loves rumors. He loves conspiracies. Or have you forgotten the last 30 years? So there's that. And I've been reading a lot of stories about this. I guess Alan Dershowitz has an article out there. I forget the exact title of it. But the general idea of it is, you know, there's not much you can do to stop these things. You can only minimize them. And there's, I guess that's partly right. I don't know how you can stop a British citizen from putting, you know, building this bomb from everyday materials, whether you're going to Home Depot or Lowe's or Walmart or whatever, and putting it together. And if he wants to die, that's what he's going to do. That doesn't mean we should stop fighting them. I continue to say that the reason these things continue and they don't seem to be slowing down is because we haven't been fighting terrorism the way we should, mainly since the middle of Barack Obama's administration, around 2011 when we got out of Iraq. We just have handled nothing well since then. Nothing. For various reasons. Mainly for Barack Obama, because he didn't want to, you know, be blamed for getting American military members killed. He didn't want to deal with that because his base believes that we're the problem in the first place. And with Donald Trump's administration, it doesn't seem to me we're doing enough yet. I'm suspecting not because of... I just think they're inept. I don't know if there is a coherent terrorist policy at all. I know Donald Trump talks a good game. And I happen to believe, as much as I dislike about him, that he would certainly handle dealing with military family members who've lost loved ones in fighting terrorists. He would certainly handle it better than Barack Obama would, as much as I don't like Donald Trump. But I think that they've painted themselves into a corner regarding this, because in their campaign, they were both isolationist and interventionist at the same time. We're going to make great America great again by putting America first. But then, on the other hand, we're going to go and kill terrorists in the Middle East. And to a lot of people, that seems like contradictory information. So I think that's a big problem with all of this. And I think that that's why we haven't seen, or at least heard about. I mean, I guess you hear things. It just doesn't seem that like much is going on. We still know that ISIS videos are being made. We still know that they're still killing people over there. We still know that they're using there's chemical weapons being used. You know, they're still raping women and children over there. And they are inspiring other people in other parts of the world, in the United States, in England, in France, elsewhere, to do this. And then we can put Al-Qaeda on top of that as well. So this is going to continue as long as that's the case. I happen to believe this guy doesn't do this. This guy doesn't bomb this Ariana Grande concert. If ISIS doesn't exist, if ISIS isn't in the news every day, if Al-Qaeda isn't in the news every day, that's what I believe. It's a good place to start, and we're not doing much. We're certainly not doing enough. Let's move on to something else. It seems that Greg Gianforte, G-I-A-N-F-O-R-T-E, as you know, I do not... watch my news, I read it, so I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but he is a guy who is running for a House seat in Montana. It's a special election because of Ryan Zinke, who was appointed Interior Secretary by Donald Trump. That position is open, that office is open, so they're having a runoff between this Greg Gianforte and a Democrat. Greg Gianforte is the Republican. And Greg Gianforte attacked a reporter. And although there is not video of it, I did listen to the audio of it. And other people did witness this attack, assault, I guess you'd call it, by Greg Gianforte on this reporter from The Guardian. The reporter's name was Ben Jacobs. Actually, coincidentally, it was reporters from Fox, maybe the local Fox affiliate. I'm not sure it was Fox News from New York City. But local Fox affiliate people witnessed this attack. And they are saying that it was definitely Ben Jacobs did nothing, and Greg Gianforte seemed to just fly off the handle. And you can hear it. Greg Gianforte goes right from being very calm to there's like noise and a scuffle and everything else. And then all of a sudden he starts shouting at this reporter. And I guess at that point he had this reporter on the ground. I guess he went after the reporter with both hands to his neck, shoved them down and was yelling at him. You know, you've done this to me before. You're from The Guardian. Right. You can certainly find the recording and the transcript of what he says out there. And you can also find a person who witnessed it, her, I think it's a she, her account of what happened. This is obviously a problem, given that the election's coming up. And this isn't good news, and some people are revoking their endorsements of Greg Gianforte. I don't know his history. I've never heard of him before. I don't know if he has something like nemesis in the background. I don't know what people who used to who've worked with him say about him. Is he prone to this? But Ben Jacobs had asked him about the health care bill in the House. I think it was that, or the budget or something like that. And it sounds to me like Greg Gianforte didn't want to answer it. He had something else to do. Ben Jacobs asks him again. Greg Gianforte tells him to talk to his press secretary. And then all of a sudden you hear the scuffling. Boom, 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 boom. And then Gianforte starts yelling at this guy. Once again, I think once Ben Jacobs was already on the ground. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. And this is something that I've said for a while. You always have to be careful when you demonize a people or a group. Conservatives have been doing this for a long time, making fun of the media, saying how they lie, it's liberal bias, and they're a bunch of liars. You can't believe them. They're nothing but tools for the Democrat Party. And some of that may be true. But you know that I think that we've jumped the shark, conservatives have jumped, too many conservative media people have jumped the shark on that a long time ago. And on top of that, you now have a president who has no problems speaking badly about the media and fake news and calling them liars and everything else. Eventually, this creates a psychosis out there. Or is it a psychosis? Whatever you want to call it. This causes a certain attitude to come to life. When you have enough people claiming that the media are liars and everything and how they're out to get conservatives and everything, you shouldn't then be surprised when then some Republican tries to choke out a reporter who asks him some questions about a bill that he may have something to do with should he get elected to the House. You know, I've made this point regarding too many conservatives regarding government regulation. As much as I hate government regulation and minimum wages and how for a couple decades now, conservative media people, Rush Limbaugh, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, talking about how government hates small business people. Well, what has that caused small business people to do? It's actually caused them to start breaking the law. It has actually caused them to start thinking, well, hey, the government's not on my side. It's actually trying to stop me from being prosperous, so I don't have to follow the laws. I would pay people under the table. I will employ people who aren't immigrants. I will not fill out the proper paperwork. I'll try to get around and break the law, environmental laws, and everything. That's eventually where it all ends up. Not because it's politics, but because people are people. And when you start telling people things like that, it's amazing how they'll convert it into something else. Instead of saying, yes, government is not a big fan of business in this country with regulation, but we need to follow it. We need to follow the laws. And if you don't like the laws, get out there and vote. Get out there and start making a difference. It's never been, that second part has never been a part of any argument I've heard by any conservative media person over the years. Now, I'm not saying they don't mean that, but the way when you have a microphone and you have thousands, if not millions of listeners, you have to be very careful on how you portray things and how you frame the topic. Because people are just dying to be given permission to break the law if they think that they're getting screwed over. And so getting back to this, I'm sure in Greg Gianforte's head, he sees any media person these days and he thinks they're the enemy. Why? Because he's been conditioned to think like that. Just as all conservatives. I mean, we know conservatives, anything from CNN, anything. CNN could say that the sun rises in the east and conservatives wouldn't believe it. They could say that the sky is blue and conservatives wouldn't believe it just because it's CNN, MSNBC, the rest of it. That's where we've gotten to with all of this. Now, I know they have their own motivations. And I knew that, no, they do skew the truth. And I know that they are not friends of mine. But still, you have to treat them with respect. I know that sucks. I know it. You know what? If you can't handle that, don't run for office. Don't run. If you can't portray yourself in a mature way, then don't run. If you don't like, if you can't stand reporters, you have some underlying thing because you're a conservative and you think they're all going to do nothing but lie about you, don't run. Don't run. And I'm sure right about now, wherever Greg Gianforte is, I'm sure he's wishing he hadn't run. I do believe that he's going to pay for this. I think. I'm pretty sure about that. Because I think it was a tight race anyway. And, you know, Montana, although it's seen as being a red state, it's not as red as you think. Although it is voted Republican in presidential elections going, I think, way back to the 1970s. It has had some Democrat senators, and it has had, I think, one or two Democrat representatives over the years. And you know, Montana, it's not that populated, so I think it only has, what, three or four or five electoral votes, something like that. So these districts tend to be pretty large because Montana is a decently large state. It's a large state with not a very large population, kind of like Nevada. So Greg Gianforte has certainly put himself in a pickle. But I have to believe that if it hadn't been all of these years of being told the media hates you, the media hates you, they're going to lie about you, this doesn't happen. This doesn't happen. And just like if it conservative media hadn't been telling business leaders, business owners for years, the government hates you, government hates you, that's how we get to a point in the 21st century where you have people who call themselves conservative, who are gun owners, they're pro-life, they're Christians, everything else, but they hate illegal immigration, but on the other hand, they'll employ people under the table, illegals under the table. That's how you get to the situation that we are in. And we wonder why we don't win as much. Everybody trying to form their own ideology out there, their own hypocritical ideology. And then they wonder why conservatives don't win as much. Yes, I know it's tough. It's difficult. If you, hey, you know what? You want to be easy in life? Have no idea. Don't get into politics. Don't have any ideology. That's the easy way out. Just play along with everything. Just kiss everybody's butt. Don't have a hardcore thought in your mind at all. If you think that it's too tough to be consistent with, then just don't do it. So, but we shouldn't be surprised by this. You know, I'm sure there's some other instances of politicians attacking reporters. Shouldn't be a surprise. When you have a president of the United States who has talked as badly about the media as he has, and you know, I think that this whole media thing is totally overblown. Totally. I'm not saying that they aren't Democrats. I'm not saying they're not liberals. I'm not saying that they don't skew the truth. I'm not saying any of that. However, I still wonder how many people really listen to them and how many people really take them seriously. So there's that part of it. You know, for all this conservative media attacking the mainstream media over the years, you'd think that there were 150 million people adults watching liberal media in the United States the last 25 years. That's not true. In fact, it's probably under 20 million. And we're getting crazy about that in a country of 300 million. But dang it, it sure does sell a lot of gold and reverse mortgages. And I got to go to the break. You can listen to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we're back at America's Conservative Podcast. I mean, you know, I've only got today and tomorrow. And I don't know when I'll be back doing politics in a podcast form. But if there is one thing that I could leave all of you, that I could convince all of you of, is that we as conservatives have gone too far attacking what you would call the mainstream media in this country. Have gone too far. I think that this is even better illustrated by what has gone on at Fox News in the last year. Between Roger Ailes leaving and the sexual harassment suits and Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly and Sean Hannity with all his kookiness regarding the murder of Seth Rich, on and on and on. We have no room to talk about any of this. We do not have the high ground on this at all. Maybe we used to, maybe. But all of this attacking for the last 20, 30 years has been done as if we are better. It shows, time has shown we are not. We can be just as kooky. We can be just as big a liars. Why? All in pursuit of an agenda. Guess who that sounds like? That sounds exactly like them. Now, what's disturbing about all of this is that we shouldn't shy away from the truth and we shouldn't buy into conspiracies because reality is the best teacher known. It is the best way to convince people that they are wrong. That we have to lie and distort just like they do to get our way. See, it doesn't surprise me that they lie and distort everything because reality and history is not on their side. History from the beginning of man, and no matter how you think man got here, from aliens, divine intervention, the Big Bang, whatever. But the history of the Homo sapien is riddled with the failure of liberalism. Failure, going back even to before biblical times, up until today, May 25th, 2017. Littered with it. And then we still feel like we have to buy in conspiracies and lies and everything else to sell ourselves. That's stupid. Stupid. But, you know, if I could convince you of one thing, I would convince, you know, I'd try to convince you of that. And I've tried to. But one thing that I want you to take away from this program is that this war on the media has only served to hurt us because we have eventually become like them. We have no moral high ground anymore. None. Zero. And you're only kidding yourself if you think otherwise. All of these people who have relentlessly attacked them and called them liars and everything else, all of them have proven that their values and morals are subjective as well. All in pursuit, I'm not even sure if it's in pursuit of a more conservative nation. I think it's in pursuit of more attention for them. I think. But this is something, you know, and it was, you know, at ricochet.com, Rob Long, who is no true hardcore conservative, he is one of the hosts, one of the guys that started ricochet.com. He was a former producer for the TV show Cheers. He has a similar attitude to myself, even though politically we don't, you know, we maybe only have 50% in common, but I think what we do have in common is that we both have entertainment backgrounds, although he's been way more successful than I have. But we've seen the other side. We've worked in liberal entertainment. We've been close to people who have been on camera and things like that. And, you know, I think that's the reason he and I have a different attitude toward this. Not that we've been seduced by the left. You know that I haven't. But I think that we realize that they aren't as powerful as some conservatives have made them out to be. The mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, they're not as strong and tough and convincing as you think they are. But after a while, when you continue to demonize them day after day after day after day, people could start to think that they are convincing and we should be afraid of them and everything when we shouldn't. Whereas I think that with Rob and myself, we have known people like that, those people doing the news. And we realize, you know what, although they're liberal and they'll never vote for Republican and they're not conservative and everything else, they really don't have as much control over people as they think or as conservatives think. Mm-hmm. They don't. But dang it, for conservatives, they make a great something to demonize, to talk about for 3 hours a day. So you know me. My belief is that if you want to look at the reason that people are liberal, it's because of their education. It's not because of their news. Once we get a handle on that, things will work themselves out. And I think that it'll become more and more obvious how much the media really does not have an effect on the way people think. Although I know it should, I guess, because it's the news. That people are much more affected by what they themselves read in their formative years, high school into college, than when they get to be 40 years old and start paying attention to politics and news, because that's when it really starts. Up until that point, 20s and 30s, you know the percentages. Not a lot of people vote. It's people's education and those things that, and that's why education, our education system, is the number one thing. If we're conservatives, this is what we should be working on every day. To break up the education monopoly in the United States, both at the town level and the college level. It needs to be broken up somehow. So, the media spent way too much time, too many people talking about it. Let's move on to something else. Obamacare premiums, this is going to be a combination of a couple stories. Obamacare premiums have doubled, or I should say Obamacare has caused premiums to be doubled since 2013. I know this for a fact. I wouldn't say that mine is doubled, but it has gone up by about 60% since 2013. I think when I moved to Florida, my premiums were like $220, and I'm now up to $350. I don't know what that percentage is. I can't do that math off the top of my head very quickly. But so I know it personally, and I know if I've been affected by it, then I know a lot of other people have been affected by it as well. And this goes along with a story that is out of Kansas about Blue Cross Blue Shield, about how they are going to be exiting both the Obamacare exchanges and the non-Obamacare exchanges in that state. The only Blue Cross Blue Shield plans you're going to be able to get are the ones that people already have prior to 2013. So you can be grandfathered in. Those people get to keep their plans. Anybody who's gotten a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan after 2013 in Kansas is going to lose it. This is also top of a story out of Idaho, where another company is leaving as well. I was reading this statement from a guy who works for Blue Cross Blue Shield in Kansas. Remember, Kansas is not that populated of a state. It's not certainly California or Texas or New York or Florida. But Blue Cross Blue Shield has lost $100 million in Kansas alone, not in the country, in Kansas alone. It's lost $100 million since 2013. $20 million a year, I guess you could say, in Kansas, in one state that isn't one of the more populated states in the country. This is why I continue to laugh, and there are people who I wouldn't say that they're Democrats, but they're Republicans, but not as of course conservative as I am, who hate Obamacare, but they still think the problem was that, you know, they gave too many breaks to the insurance companies. Insurance companies really have made out in this. That was the mistake. They hate Obamacare. They think it was a bad idea simply because that the insurance companies were involved and because the insurance companies are making so much money. Oh, you mean they're making so much money and that Blue Cross Blue Shield has lost $100 million in Kansas? Is that what you mean by making money? You know, all of this stuff, you know, it's just crazy to try to understand. It's hard to get inside people's heads, and you know, you start finding out when you read and you listen to people and everything how biased they are. How many things that just don't compute? It's confirmation bias. Anything that is a fact that goes against what they think, they just discount it. It's just like it doesn't exist. And there are still many people who believe, and who aren't necessarily liberals, who think that the biggest problem about what has gone on has been the insurance companies. Well, these premiums are going up because the insurance companies are being protected, and they're still losing money. And now they're getting out of these places. You know, businesses do not leave areas where they're making money. They don't get out of Kansas or Idaho or Florida, anywhere else where they're making money. They leave places where they're losing their butt, which is, I think, in just about all 50 states now for these insurance companies. This is another thing, being that, once again, tomorrow's going to be the last episode for a while. This is another thing that I want you to take away from this. One of the things I continue to say is that laws and politicians don't cure people. Doctors and nurses do. That's something that is important for you to remember as you continue to run into people who are liberals or conservatives who aren't quite right or whatever. There is no law in this land that can cure somebody. No matter how long or how short or anything else. Unless we're just going to put doctors and we're going to turn doctors and nurses and MRI techs and surgeons and everybody else, psychiatrists, we're going to turn them into slaves where we say either you help this person or we're going to murder you. We're going to execute you. That's the only way a law can fix anybody. Otherwise, these people are doing things by choice. They're going into these professions by choice, and they get to choose who they work on. And we should make those choices as easy to make as possible, but we don't. We make it harder as possible because they don't get paid. They have to wait forever. Medicare, Medicaid, these stupid government programs, they screw these people over. It's on and on and on. We make it very difficult for these clinics to stay in business, for doctors to want to, you know, young people to become doctors and nurses. We make it very difficult on them when they see what's ahead for the next 40 years if they're going to go into that profession, especially all the time and money and stress and everything else that you have to do to become a doctor or a nurse in this country. We should not then be surprised when less of them choose to do that. The heck with that, I'm going to go be an accountant. The heck with that, I'm going to go get a government job. I'm going to be a bureaucrat in some department, you know, writing red tape. That's what I'm going to do. That's sure a heck a lot easier, and there's less regulation there and less things I'll have to deal with than trying to save somebody's life. Also, I want you to remember that the only way this is going to get off, you know, if we're going to keep going down this road where premiums keep going up and people losing their coverage and all that, eventually we're going to get to the point where the employee plans, people who get their health insurance through companies, that'll be the deciding factor. When they start going up by 50%, by 100%, because that's how a majority of people in the United States still get their health care coverage. It's like 80% of the population. When they start going up by that is when this will get fixed. I'm still not convinced that politicians, you know, I look at, you know, this AHCA, this boondoggle that has been written and everything. It's you've heard me talk quite a bit about it. It's one thing, other opinion I have about it. It's written as if these guys and women know that, you know what, by doing this, we're only really, you know, this is only 20% of the population. What's the big deal? Whereas I can assure you, if everybody was being affected by Obamacare and everybody's premiums had gone up 50%, 75%, 100% in the last 5 years, employee plans, everybody's, the bill that the House would write would be so pristine, it would glisten in the sunlight. Because I think still they're thinking, well, this is only affecting 15%, 20% of the population, and we're going to just do this political reasons. There is a part of me that believes that. But what I would say to them is that if you think you've heard complaints about Obamacare now, you just wait until those employee plans start kicking in. If you're going to keep Obamacare around in its current form, you just wait. You think you've heard complaints now. If you don't want to show up for town hall meetings now, you wait till premiums go up for employee base plans, 100%. You'd do well to avoid that. You'd do well to make all this go away before that happens. Because that's going to be 80% of the population. That means 80% of voters, and they're all going to be ticked off at you. All over the spectrum. All over the political spectrum. So, but Blue Cross Blue Shield, getting out of Kansas, has lost $100 million there in one state. I'd love to know what some of these other states that have bigger populations with these companies have lost. And then it's no news to me that the premiums have doubled since 2013. That brings me to my final point for today. It has to do with economic growth. Once again, Kevin Williamson at National Review has an excellent article. It's called The Growth Fairy. And, you know, anytime that any administration or Congress does budgeting, they start trying to predict what the economy is going to be a year from now, 5 years from now, because how the economy is doing is directly affects how much taxes are collected. economic growth spurs more more spending and more sales taxes are collected, more people making money, more income taxes collected. And that's why over the years, to kind of make their budgets work, both Republican and Democrat Congresses have predicted abnormally high rates of growth to try to explain why spending is going to go up. Now, we know that that growth rate never happens. But the spending always happens. And so that's why, if you want one more reason why we run deficits in the United States, it's that. They say that a budget is, or some continuing resolution balances, but they always overestimate how the economy is going to do. It's part of the problem. The real problem, as Kevin Williamson points out, is that this budget that Trump has come out with, is predicting, and we know that budgets get done in the House and then sent to the Senate anyway, but is predicting like 3.5% growth, which is double what the United States has been doing since the Great Recession of 2000, 2007, 2008. and is above even historical averages since 1950. So from 1950 to 2017, the GDP rate of growth has been about 3.2%. Donald Trump and his people are predicting 3.5%. So what do you think the odds are of us getting above the average of the last 60-some years, 67 years, I guess, when we've only been able to, you know, we're only going along at a 1.5% clip, and all of a sudden we're going to go up to 3.5%, and there's no reason that we can point at that would cause that economic growth to jump up like that. He makes another very, very, very good point. All these people who believe that by fixing our illegal immigration problem or immigration problem period, that it's going to make spur the economy on because more Americans are working. He says, well, you know, that's a little hard to believe because here's why. Between 1950 and 2017, the population of the United States doubled. We went from about 150-some million to about 330 million. And there is no doubt that your average person in 2017 is better off, wealthier and everything than he or she was in 1950. So what it proves is you can have a population increase, whether it's through your own people making babies or letting immigrants in. You can still have prosperity in a country and still the population go up and have immigrants coming in from other countries. It's funny how now we've totally flipped around and said, you know what, to prosper, we need to keep people out. And Kevin Williamson makes a good point. When you have 330 million people in a country, now granted, a lot of those are going to be children who have no spending power. But let's say it's 220 million adults. What it means is it's easier to make money off of 200. You have just simply have more customers for whatever you're doing, whether you have an internet business or a brick and mortar business, there are just more people around. Well, when there's more people, there's more chance to make sales and to, you know, mow lawns or whatever you do, sell ice cream or whatever. Whereas back in 1950, you had half the customers. Now you have double the customers. That's how people get prosperous, by having customers, by not limiting a customer base, but by expanding it. And this is one more reason. I came up with this idea, I mean, a year and a half ago, when I said, see, you know, the reason that conservatives are so hot on this immigration issue is because they think it's going to fix everything. They think it's going to fix terrorism. They think it's going to fix the economy, all these other things, when it's not. It's only going to fix the immigration problem. These economic issues, these terrorism issues, these growth issues, economic growth issues are our own. They are not being caused necessarily by outside forces, except for some Americans who see ISIS stuff online and decide they want to do that too. But that has nothing to do with immigration. And so what I'm saying is that all of this stuff you're being told about how the United States is going to get prosper again and get up to 3% or 4% growth, what you've been told by too many conservatives is a lie. It's just an outright lie. We need more people. We need workers of all skill levels. We need more customers because workers become customers and businesses need customers. You need them. They need you. That's how an economy works. And so Kevin Williamson, I would urge you to go to National Review online and read this article that he wrote about the growth fairy. But I got to go. One more day to go. EdwardDensel.com is the website. You can find this program on RedStateTalkRadio.com for one more day or two more or one more day. Also, Podomatic and iTunes for one more day. And then my other program that I'm going to be devoting all of my time to now is called Unfound. I've got a new logo coming out for that show as well. missing persons program where I interview the family members of people who disappeared. And you can find that on Podomatic and iTunes. Check it out. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.